Silence. Silence in the court of cyber. Cyber attacks are getting smarter and more adaptive every day, turning yesterday's tricks into tomorrow's standard workbooks. Yes, hackers are humans as well, and they do have workbooks, and they do sleep, and they do regular human things. So they are humans with their human errors. On this episode, we sit down with Peter Helms, a senior solutions engineer at Trellix, to unpack how advanced threats are evolving and what that means for all of us. Peter brings years of frontline experience helping organizations battle these threats, and he's here to share eye-opening war stories and practical tips. So get ready, set, and go. And we cannot do without our call to action. So if you like this episode, then please, like, follow, comment, and tell your friends and your friends' friends, and if you can reach their friends as well. Also, if you have some comments, reach back. If you want us to talk about some topics, then write us an email, or you know, you can just contact me on the LinkedIn, for example. So private message me. I'm Ronnie Janhold, and hello, Peter. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Nice to be here. Thank you.
So who are you? Who are you, Peter?
I am working in the security space. In my current role, I've been here for 15 years, different acquisitions and mergers in my current role. So I'm basically today helping customers be secure. So that's my current role. I did used to work in my previous two other roles prior to that. So before coming to McAfee, as the company was at the time, I was at Ernst & Young, and I was a security consultant testing the security of our customers. So from that side, I was able to understand what are the weaknesses of if the infrastructure, the networks, and all what's behind that. And even before that, I was managing the IT security, or IT, I would say that at that time, in a company. So it's been good for me to have all these different kinds of backgrounds to understand when talking to customers. I can see that from their perspective, and also understand how security works, basically.
So when you jumped on board, what was the reality like? So what were the yesterday's attacks that you witnessed?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was really about, from the management side, about a lot of it was about having a firewall and patching systems. And at the time, that you usually have to do everything manually. There was no automatic patching or anything. When we saw attacks, it was more like, just for fun, people developing, I love you virus and other stuff. They could just to see and get famous on what they could do. Perhaps that made some disruptions in the network and in traffic and stuff like that. But it was really just disturbance, not really a bad attacks at that time, I would say.
So do you know that the guy who wrote the I Love You is now working working as a mobile phone repairman?
Oh, I did not know that. I think he from the Philippines or something.
Yes. So that's the reality there. So do you have some kind of a joke from there? Do you have some kind of a story you would like to share with us from those days?
So in the days of testing security, it was all about signed and agreed, so nothing that I would advise anybody else would to do unless you have an agreement with a company, of course. But we did a couple of interesting tests, like testing security. So the most fun ones were when you had money involved. So if you couldn't generate money, and I was able to do that in one of the tests we did, work for many companies in Europe, and one of them was a gambling site. So I was able to circumvent the login security. I was able to basically generate money in that system, and I could also change the account setting so I could have all that payout to my own account. So it was part of a test, of course, but it's still fun when you can, but yeah, when money is involved. So that was a lot about security controls, and you know, discuss with the customers and the partners in that sense as well, how, you know, giving advice on how to protect it as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's fun to order a television from online store and getting not with zero price, but they pay even for that, right?
Yeah, we did actually have some tests on that as well. So testing shopping sites, and you know you can put in whatever price you wanted, you could receive it. And we even had one company who didn't notice anything. You know, we were also testing how do they respond to this. Did they see that something was going on? And one of the organizations, they didn't care. They didn't really want to talk to us, you know, even though they lost money. So in the end, we forced a money transfer to them to say, we're not going to cheat you. Here is your money. But the idea was really to help them yeah, have better security in the end.
Yeah. So today the security also has evolved quite many steps, and the regulatory at that end as well. So penetration testing is quite normal practice today.
Yeah. So and I think at the time in the early days we saw a lot of script kiddies just finding scanning tools and hacking, but it was they sometimes couldn't do much. What of course we see today is much more targeted, and also they want to earn money on that mostly. So we see probably I've seen a report on the criminal organizations that you know, the big ones out there also dealing with drugs and stuff. So cybersecurity and the hacking income is actually has overtaken like drugs. That's a pretty serious story. We need as an industry to take that serious when those organizations are going into hacking as well. It shows how much money there is to make for them.
Mm-hmm. So can you say that this is like APTs, Advanced Persistent Threats, the groups? So criminals have formed groups. They have names, group names, and working towards money. So this is the main point of evolution from back then, would you say?
Yes, exactly. So we see it's always a battle, right? We're on the defender's side, and we see how the attackers operate. And they're also taking advantage of when things are changing. So like the cloud adoption, of course, attackers are going that way, the expanding attack surface. They are also more stealthy today. I would say that's one of the differences from maybe a couple of years ago. You could easily spot them if you're looking for the logs and see something was going on. They're using techniques today. They are using sometimes tools that are already deployed in the environment. So they call it living of the land tools. So using existing applications to perform attacks whenever they're inside in the network. So that's much more difficult to detect, because living of the land tools is something that there's a legitimate tool that is used for business purposes and admin purposes in the company. So that they also use for attack is something that challenges the defenders on our side to find out when is that actually used maliciously or not. So that is one of the change.
So the general idea is that you know, a sword or a knife can be used in various ways.
Yeah.
So in the kitchen, we would use knife to cut bread, but you can also use that for stabbing purposes. So
exactly.
you have an internal tool that is not inherently malicious, but you use it as a means to do bad, right?
Exactly.
So what would you say that would be make it, why is it so hard to defend against APTs and these kind of groups?
Yeah, and one of the things is that it is more stealthy. So they are the more serious organizations or criminal activities are using sometimes phishing. We see phishing a way to get inside the organization because security has been a lot around securing the infrastructure and securing servers and systems as such. But how can you get in? And one of the weakest things are the humans. So if you can have them click a link, that is an easy way in. So we see, even though it might be sometimes targeted phishing, so spear phishing, as they call it as well, targeting specific persons inside, maybe with extended privileges, like IT admins, have them click a link. That's a much more dangerous thing because they will have more privilege when they are compromised, those accounts. So, and also other times we see the maybe one of the biggest password problems we have is password reuse. So if you know a person has a leaked account, it could be any web page or website, there is a leaked account and password. Many times they can reuse that password because password reuse is something that is many of us do. So that's easy way to get in without being notified because you know you're logging in successfully, and if you don't have like other multi-factor authentication or anything, you're inside, and then you can perform your attack. And then when you are inside, use of these existing tools, living on the LAN tools that already exist, it gets more stealthy, and that's why it is more difficult to detect. And also, if you don't have anything specifically in the environment looking for that, you won't see that because if of course you will most often see an attack that's too late. So if you're not looking for signs of that before an attack, you're losing out.
But how would you say the they are people as well, and how would you say that global events have influenced APT activities?
So first phase of those things recently is COVID. Like the everything's been working from home, so a lot of systems and infrastructure was changed. It had to happen rapidly, so there were configuration errors. So they're setting up cloud infrastructure very quickly. So those were targets as well. We see very recently the use of AI for maybe make phishing attacks more credible. You can have use them as a tool to create phishing messages, and we see they're better, but it's also the quantity has exploded in the number of phishing attempts, at least against organizations. And we also start to see deepfake, although it hasn't really maybe leveraged that much yet. We will see that in the future. So somebody calling, acting as another person, they copy the voice, so the person taking the phone would seem that they are talking to the right person. So that's another thing that we see coming up.
So moving towards the defensive side of things, because we here, the good guys, we are being overwhelmed with alerts, and the security teams are really stressed of the influx of alerts and the stressful job. And I kind of like think that soon enough we'll see a psychology service that will be, made available, I don't know, as a healthcare plan for SOC analysts or something like that. But yeah, the influx of messages and alarms received is way too much. But there's also a hidden risk of not reacting to low alerts as well. Why is that
Exactly.
dangerous?
Yeah, exactly. So in previous, let's say, times, I would say that people were looking for whenever there was a security incident, you know, something was blocked, you know, seems to be fine, it was deleted, the threat is over, we can continue. But the fact is that they probably, for many of these attacks, could have been prevented if they were looking for early signs of that. So again, low and medium threats, maybe many organizations don't look at that, and I understand why. It's they're busy, they don't have time to do that, and they, as you said, they are just overloaded, they can't do everything, so they focus on maybe the most highest risk, and they are not seeing everything, so that's, yeah, they could basically have prevented many of attacks of that kind.
So I believe that you have a good story for us where, you know, things have escalated, where a seemingly minor alert had gone unseen.
Unnoticed, yeah, exactly. So, So I know that we have been involved in some kind of incident response engagements that I've personally been involved in that, but I've heard about it. So even nation state attacks, breaking like, you know, 30, 40,000 computers from another nation state, they could have been prevented. So, you know, incident response comes in, of course, understands the attack and helps in recovery and stuff like that. But they were also afterwards, you know, what can we learn from this? And very often you learn that they could have been prevented, which is, you know, a pretty interesting thing is that if they were looking at the right places and have taken that seriously and investigated, you know, what is this, instead of, ah, oh, this is a low alert, I know, don't care about it. It's really, yeah, a learning experience that we can all learn from. And I've also seen another customer that, you know, implementing tools for specific EDR purposes, whenever they deployed EDR, they were seeing attacks that were going on that they couldn't see with the, you know, the security solution that they already had, probably because that solution only prevented attacks. It was not looking to see what other signs that was maybe not an attack. That's the purpose of EDR. So certainly there are things we can do to uncover this.
So it was like turning flashlight on, right?
Exactly. So if you don't look, you don't see that, right? And I understand why, because it maybe in the first generation EDR tools, you had to look for everything yourself. There's no help maybe associated at that time, but we have more help today to uncover and help investigate all the other things today.
So I have a story too that goes back 10 plus years or most likely more, where I was at a customer and I was deploying central management software for antivirus, and while I was deploying that software, I overtook the management of agents of computers that had been running antivirus for past years, and shortly after, I began receiving logs from these workstations, and they had been fighting virus attacks long before the central management was installed. It's like years back from there, and then I was receiving those logs that they had done good work on their own. So that was a nice story.
Right.
So, but takedowns of threat actor groups. So these groups of criminals, they have been also challenged from law and from the good side, and many of those, or left, not many of those, but some of those have been taken down, and Trellix research team has been involved in plenty of those activities. There is a story around Phobos gang. What is Phobos gang?
Right. So yeah, Trellix has been involved in cooperation with other private companies, but also law enforcement around the world to basically try to stop these attacks. So it's a huge task. It's around the world. There are many countries involved, many organizations. So and threats are evolving all the time. So it's not easy to do that. But we have a couple of stories on that. So one of them, as you mentioned, Phobos, a ransomware group that was selling in underground forums tools to help other people who maybe wanted to earn the money. They can subscribe, or sometimes it's hacking as a service, which means you can basically go in and you can pay for, like, you can pay for stolen credit cards. You can also pay for ransomware tools and other hacking tools that you can use to extort your targets. So, like a subscription service and such. So it's really with, setups from the internet. You have like a storefront. You can buy this and buy that. So it's really crazy to see that sometimes. The focus was group was focusing on ransomware. So extortion of victims. So they encrypt files and they put up a ransom that they have to pay. Usually that's the form of a cryptocurrency. But we were able to help take down one of the ecosystems of that particular Phobos ransomware group with the help of course, a nation, not nation state, but police organizations around the world to because you need to stop all the feeds. They're smart, the attackers. They use our service in many countries. So for us and with the organizations to help to stop them, that's pretty that's a big task. But there was also arrest in this case, a Russian national that was behind some of the administration behind the websites selling this was arrested. And then we see the client, of course, successfully. We can see those tools are not being used that much anymore. So of course that's a good thing. And there was also another one, Cobalt Strike, that and the interesting thing here is Cobalt Strike is also a platform for doing commercial penetration testing. So those organizations that perform tests legally, they can buy this tool and use it, but it's also being used maliciously. And just as a let's say a way of describing how big that was, taking down the Cobalt Strike network, it took 2 years to do that, from the start of the monitoring to the takedown of all that infrastructure. So working with, again, law enforcement around the world and also other organizations, we helped set up a sharing platform for the threat intel. So each day we were sharing new threat intel for the other members of that takedown group to share the threats, because they're evolving so fast, we have to do daily sharing. In the end, there were 2 billion detections of activity. We had 45 million files that were flagged. We had 500,000 unique domains on the internet and 1.6 billion IP addresses. So it just tells how big a task it is for us as a security organization, but also law enforcement. So there's really a lot of work going into to catch these, because again, they're always evolving and doing that. So yeah, quite a big task.
So when was that? That was some time ago, or?
So the Cobalt Strike was in mid of 24. So
24. Ah, sorry. Yes, sorry. Just recently. So that was a big thing. I would understand that there is also some arrests involved.
I'm not exactly sure about Cobalt Strike, about which arrests were made. I'm not sure about that.
Okay. So would you say that the takedown of CobbleStrike has left kind of like a vacuum to the marketplace? Or
so the positive side is that we see, of course, disruptions of these slows down the attack. There might be still some uses, but if you take down the major infrastructure, everything goes down. You can't buy them anymore. You can't use the tools maybe from those sides. So that's one positive thing. It also sends a good message to other attack groups that, you know, you can be caught. No matter how stealthy you think you are on the internet, you always leave clues around. And somebody's watching you. So that's, again, discouraging maybe some other attacks to try to do stuff because they can't feel safe. On the other hand, let's say on the negative side, it also pushes the evolution of attacks from their side. So if we found out ways that they are operating, they might need to find other ways of doing stuff. So they are also trying to evolve their ways of attacking networks. So that's something we have to look out for.
Mm-hmm. So that's how the game goes. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly the way the game goes. But
yeah.
How do we stay ahead of hackers of tomorrow?
So we want really to, when we deploy software, I would say, or software security as in general, I think we have to make sure that we are not using the same security everywhere. I mean, don't use the same security solution on your workstations that your employees are working, and then on your critical servers that holds all your intellectual property and all your secret stuff. That should be maybe a different thing. So we talk about adaptive defense. Make sure that you are applying the correct security controls the right places. We like to say that you should do that from a risk perspective. So what is the risk? Risk always involves business. That's a good thing because whenever something happens, it's hurting the business. So businesses need to make sure that they adapt just as any other business risk. IT risk is a business thing. So how much risk are you willing to take? What's your risk appetite? And then after that has kind of been evaluated, you can then apply the security controls in those places. So like the most critical things, of course, needs protection may be better than you have today, for instance. So, and then I think also like, as you were kind of hinting, you know, staying ahead, how can we make sure that whenever there is an attack or that we are prepared for handling attacks, we should expand our monitoring platform. So again, we have not only the old infrastructure, like a data center that we had in the old days, we have our employees working maybe from home many times, their endpoints, they're using email. There is a cloud infrastructure, they have identity solutions. We have also a lot of companies using operational technology, so like production networks and banking and retail. Securing those systems is one thing, but because we see attacks moving from those different points to the next, so they're moving from maybe from cloud to the IT to the OT environments, we should make sure that we have like a 360 visibility into all of these things. Because if you have different people looking at different things, you don't know what's going on in the other silos, right? You need one SOC that operates and understands all of these threats from a single view and understand when things are moving around the infrastructure. So I would say that's the other thing of that equation that you need to look deeper and have visibility in what's going on. Before, if you don't have visibility, you can't respond to that.
Mm-hmm. So not only technology, because SOC is something that is, I like to call it a design marvel. It's a three-legged stool. So
right.
One part of that is technology. Second part of that is people. And the third part of that is process.
Right. Yeah, you need all three, and process is an important thing, because if you don't have the processes around what people should do and how it should work, you know, you're losing out as well. Can't really work in an optimal situation if you don't have like the processes in place. I totally agree on that.
So if there is like a one key action or something that you would like to reflect on the listeners for our podcast show today, you know, to take something away from this discussion, one point, what would that be?
Yeah, to say one thing is probably a bit difficult, but there are many things you can always do. But I would say one thing that I was pretty surprised on what we can do to help organizations threat these attacks is really use of AI. So maybe you think, oh, AI, we heard about that before. It just that's just maybe a ChatGPT, blah, blah, blah thing. But no, if you're looking for the right places, you'll find that AI can actually help you, also in the SOC, analyze threats that you wouldn't be looking for. So we talked about the medium and low. Many organizations are not looking maybe into that sufficiently. They don't have time to do that. But AI can help you make sure that all threat alerts are handled, they are evaluated, because maybe like a one low threat added and correlated with a medium threat actually give you enough contextual intelligence to say that this is really something you need to look at, and AI can help you with that. So I say that is the one thing that organizations should not be afraid of going into, because it can really help you be better at detecting and thwarting attacks before they get really serious.
Mm-hmm. So advice and key takeaway from the show would be explore the AI, right?
Exactly. And AI that specifically helps target these evaluations of threats and log files that we get from everywhere. I also see some organizations, they're not are getting enough logs because they think it's maybe irrelevant or it's too big a burden for the persons that we talked about to evaluate. So with this, you can really turn all the log sources that you feel is relevant and make sure that nothing is missed. I think I would say that's the takeaway here.
And on that bombshell, we will conclude our discussion. Peter is always ready to take in questions. So am I. And thank you, Peter, for coming to the show.
And you,
the listener there, who you are hiking or in a traffic jam, listening to our show here, do feel like, comment, share, and pass onwards to your friends. Also, feel free to private message me in LinkedIn or wherever you can find me. And give some topics for next shows or shows after them. So thank you, and see you again, or you will be hearing us again in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.